following are introductory comments on the historical persons and events underlying Webster's play, The Duchess of Malfi. The tragic tale of Giovanna d'Aragona and Antonio Bologna. In what follows, I rely mainly on Frank Lucas's historical introduction to Webster's main characters in The Duchess of Malfi in his collection, The Complete Works of John Webster, Volume 2, London, Chatto and Windus, 1927. John Webster's Jacobean revenge masterpiece is fairly close to ripped from the headlines. Well, the story underlying the fiction wasn't that current, but it dated back only to around 1512, when the real-life Duchess of Amalfi, Giovanna d'Aragona, disappeared. She was the granddaughter of the Aragonese king Ferdinand, or Ferrante, I of Naples. Lucas writes of this grandfather that, quote-unquote, his enemies indeed asserted that he was really no true scion of Aragon, but his mother's bastard by a Moor of Valencia, page 7. Well, by his mistress Diana Guardati of Sorrento, grandfather Ferrante fathered a son, Enrico d'Aragona, half-brother of King Alfonso of Naples. Enrico married Polisena Centel, spelled C-E-N-T-E-L-L-E-S, in 1465, and in 1473 was made Marchese di Gerace. He died in 1478, having fathered the children who make up the key part of Webster's dramatis personae. Lodovico, our cardinal, Carlo, our Ferdinand, Duke of Calabria, and Giovanna, our future Duchess of Malfi. He had another daughter named Caterina, but she doesn't figure in Webster's play. Webster's Antonio was Antonio Bologna of the Beccadelli family, who came of distinguished but apparently not royal stock. He had served Federico, the Aragonese king of Naples, who, after a difficult stretch politically, died at Tours, France, in 1504. Federico's last title was Duke of Anjou, which was given him by his enemy, Louis XII of France. Not long after Federico's death in 1504, Antonio Bologna made his way to Naples, where the Duchess of Amalfi offered him the position of major domo, a place of high responsibility and regard. We might use the term steward or estate manager. They fell in love and married secretly. That wouldn't be an easy thing to do in a treacherous court environment. As for the Duchess Giovanna d'Aragona herself, she was a young widow, since in 1498 her first husband, Alfonso I Piccolomini, Duke of Malfi, supposedly from a stab wound inflicted by his enemy, the Count of Celano, leaving her with a baby son, Alfonso II, for whom she ruled Amalfi as regent. Giovanna had married the Duke in 1490, when she would have been only around 10 or 12 years old. Antonio and the Duchess had a son and managed to conceal the fact, but then a daughter was born, and the Cardinal and Frederick seemed to have got wind of this event and attached spies to the couple. In fear, Antonio left with his two children for Ancona, 170 miles northeast of Rome, along the Adriatic Sea. The Duchess, in an advanced stage of pregnancy, with their third child, made a show of heading for the shrine of San Francesco at Loreto, but actually traveled with a great retinue to Ancona to be with Antonio and their children. At Ancona, the Duchess, writes Lucas, quote-unquote, threw off the mask before her astonished household. She would renounce her rank, she said, and henceforth live quietly with her husband in a private station. Page 9. Apparently, a servant informed on them to the Cardinal of Aragon. Antonio, realizing that a sentence of expulsion from Ancona would soon be pronounced by Cardinal Gonzaga, Ancona's legate for Pope Julius II, made his way by mid-1511 to Siena, along with the Duchess and the children. Predictably, they ended up being pressured out of Siena, and in 1512 they turned towards Venice for safety. They never made it there, but were instead caught at Forli by armed horsemen. The Duchess convinced Antonio to escape from this trap, which he did, making his way successfully to Milan with the couple's eldest son. The Duchess herself, however, was forcibly escorted with the other two kids and her waiting woman, our Cariola, to a castle in Amalfi. No one ever saw any of them again. Lucas has the date of disappearance sometime in 1512. As an aside, the town of Amalfi on the southwest coast of Italy, in the modern province of Salerno, was founded around the 4th century Common Era, and after growing to be the powerful duchy or Republic of Amalfi during the 10th through 11th centuries Common Era, by the Duchess's time it was part of the Kingdom of Naples. By 1504, this kingdom was controlled by the Spanish King Ferdinand II of the famous ruling duo Ferdinand and Isabella. With regard to Antonio, he lived on until October 1513. Although forewarned by a captain who had been commissioned to assassinate him, he was cut down on his way to Mass at the Church of San Francesco. He was killed by none other than Daniel da Bosolo, along with three other accomplices. The murderers escaped from Milan. Lucas points out that Delio, who is said to have actually heard the ruckus made by the attack against Antonio, was none other than our novelist Matteo Bandello, who also took this name of Delio in his sonnets. Lucas caps off the story with the following astonishing passage, quote unquote, "It throws, we may add, an ironic light on the standards of the day to find Bandello, a few pages later, ellipsis, dedicating another of his tales with every expression of gratitude and esteem to the murderer, Lodovico, Cardinal of Aragon," page 11. Thanks for listening. The date of this audio recording is Friday, July 11th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For the history in this section, I have mainly relied on the complete works of John Webster, edited by F.L. Lucas, London, Chatto and Windus, 1927. Lucas himself seems to rely for his historical material mainly on Bandello and on Domenico Morellini's Giovanna d'Aragona, Duchessa d'Amalfi, Cesena, 1906.